Wow. I'm really impressed. Well, I'll be speaking to you guys, mostly. However, I would advise those of you who think you have been with me before to put that aside and forget it. Is there anybody here who has never been with Gangaji? Ah, excellent. Well, let's start from the beginning. Let's start with what satsang is. Since these meetings are called by the name of satsang, let's start with talking about what satsang is and is not. Satsang, and bear with me, I'm sure that much of what I say you already know, but that's okay. Satsang is a Sanskrit word. It's an ancient word that loosely translated means association with truth. Now, there are many meetings that are held everywhere around the world that go by the name of satsang. You know, it doesn't have a liturgy, and it doesn't have a set of rules. So pretty much any time people come together, it's quite all right for them to call it satsang. But satsang with John Sherman goes like this. Satsang begins when we realize that what we really, really want, no matter what intermediate things we have thought we want in order to get to it, that what we really, really want is the truth. The real truth. Not some spiritual concoction of the truth. Like we have heard about the Buddha and we have heard about all of these great beings that have appeared and told us or seem to have told us what the truth is. That's not the truth we really want. Satsang begins when we see that first of all, we don't have a clue what the truth is. We don't even know where to look for it if we did have a clue what it was we were looking for. And that we really want to know the truth. That in the end, it's only the truth, the final truth, the truth that settles it all, that puts an end to it all, that'll satisfy us in this life. So that's where satsang begins. And that's why it is appropriately called association with truth. For most of us, we have had a lifetime of seeking after understanding or wealth, comfort, relationships, power, security. Things of these, and the things that will give us those end results, only to find that if we even approach the gratification of these desires, that they don't give us what we really want, that we're left in the end with having accomplished what we want to accomplish, but we get nothing for it. We still have this underlying existential unease, something missing, something not here, no matter how effective we've been in our lives. That unease is this desire for the truth, what it really is. We have, most of us, gone through a long or short period of our lives seeking after what it is that we think will give us peace and rest and satisfaction and fulfillment in the material realm, in the realm of things and relationships and so forth. And then at some point in our lives, it occurred to us through some, God knows where it comes from, this idea, that perhaps what we are really looking for is of a spiritual nature and not material at all. And we have all heard the stories of awakenings, the stories of enlightenment, the stories of the Buddha and Shankara and Padmasambhava and Ramana Maharshi and whoever else. There have been many great beings that have passed through humanity over the years who have come to us and told us, nothing is what you think it is. Nothing. And told us that it is really possible to be finished with the search here and now, in this moment. And we have read, most of us, not all of us the same stuff, but most of us have read and heard plenty of commentary on what these great beings have come to suggest to us. Plenty of songs and poems, sutras and shastras and Upanishads and books, teachings, practices. We have been able to construct within our own imagination some idea of what the state of enlightenment might be that these beings seem to radiate. And we seek after these states that we have concocted because we believe that that's what we're looking for and that's what's been offered by these great beings, is some new state, some new accomplishment, some new way of being, different than what we have been. And it's quite natural and quite commonplace for us to have a sense of what it is that they're pointing to and seek with all our hearts to manifest that state, the state of enlightenment, the state of open-hearted consciousness, a state of peace, a state of emptiness. We have heard of and perhaps studied and practiced innumerable practices that are supposedly designed to bring us to this state of awareness and radiance, open-hearted, innocent peacefulness. Meditation practices, mantra practices, all kinds of practices to replace the practices that we have been accustomed to in our day-to-day life, the practices that we have adopted to be able to get wealth or power or security or relationship and so forth. And these practices, many of them are quite effective at producing states that seem to be what we're looking for. States of peace and beauty and harmony, openness, emptiness. But these states, as they come, so also do they go. They come when we are practicing, or they come on their own time, and then they vanish when their time is done, leaving behind the state of wishing we could have that last state back and hold on to it, a state that we want to get rid of. Or we have come upon teachers, avatars, godlike beings, in whose presence our mind stops, in the presence of whom the exhilaration and excitement and energy of reality seems to consume us. New states. And like the states that we accomplish on our own, are the states that we get through the practice of meditation and so forth, the states that accompany these transmissions also come and go, leaving us bereft in the state of wishing that we could get that last state back again and hold on to it. Well, satsang isn't about any of that. At least not satsang with John Sherman. Satsang is not about any kind of practices, practices that are intended to produce states and stabilize them. It's not about any kind of, and another thing that we have come upon, I'm sure, in our spiritual wanderings, is the lust for understanding, the conviction that understanding is what's needed, that if I could just get it, if I could just see and understand with my mind this madness that is life, that is existence, that would do it. Well, satsang ain't about that either. It's not about understanding. It's not about any kind of practice that's likely to create in you some state that you will fall in love with. States may come and go. They always do. And it certainly isn't about any kind of transmission from me to you. Any kind of special magical power whereby I can infuse you with openness and emptiness and an end, a finishing, fulfillment. Satsang is about wanting the truth and recognizing that it's my responsibility, not mine, but me as you and you and you and all of you individually, that this life is my own responsibility, and that the hunt, the desperate desire for the truth is your own responsibility. That no one can give it to you. No one. There is absolutely no possibility that anything anyone can say, anything anyone can transmit, anything that you can accomplish in any practice can bestow upon you the real truth. Not possible. So, satsang is, if it has a transmission, its transmission is carried by conversations between me and you, by grappling together, by trying to understand our language, me trying to understand what you are asking, you trying to understand what I am suggesting, through the really dense wall of language, of communication in this form. It is a mistake to assume that just because we speak the same language, we are speaking the same language. Now, what I have to offer is my own experience. And what I have to offer is really very little and really very simple. These great beings, by means of whom this whole idea of enlightenment has appeared in humanity, these great beings, and I'm not speaking of the commentators on them, I'm not speaking of the religions and liturgies that have been concocted around their appearance on earth, I'm not speaking about any of the organizations and understandings and all of that, beautiful as they might be. I'm speaking of the essence of what they all had to say and the essence of what they all had to say is strikingly the same. They have all had to say, no matter how it differs a little bit from culture to culture and time to time, they have all had to say something quite simple. They have said that what you really want is the truth. That nothing, nothing whatsoever is what you think it is. And that most profoundly and most fundamentally, you are not what you think you are. And it is that last misunderstanding, the understanding of who you are, of what you are, of what your actual nature is, that is at the heart of all misery and suffering and horror in humanity in all times. At the heart of it is this misunderstanding of what I am. And they have told us, all of them also, that the truth is to be found only in one place, and that's within you. Nowhere else. Jesus went so far as to elaborate and say, when they come to you and tell you it's there, or it's over there, or it's in that book, or it's somewhere else, pay them no attention. The truth is within you. The kingdom of God is within you. So that really simplifies things. And that's part of the problem. Because really, we don't like simple. We really like complicated. But it's really simple. You are the truth. You are the truth. There is nothing anywhere to be found other than you. So, the solution to all of the confusion, to all of the seeking, to all of the struggle, to all of the hatred, self-hatred, what's all self-hatred? All is to find out what you are. Here. In this moment. Directly. Now that's the offering that I first heard through Ramana Maharshi, who was amazing. He had no spiritual understandings when he happened upon the truth of his nature. He was a 16-year-old boy taken by the fear of death. And despite all of the pressure that was really put upon him where he was in his realm, despite all the pressure that was put upon him to make something of this truth, he refused to do so and really had only one thing to say again and again, and that was, to every question, for whom is this question? Who are you? Really? So, the offering of satsang is the offering of the possibility in this moment to know the truth of your own nature. What you are. Not a spiritual truth. You know, I mean, I don't suggest to you that you should find out that you are infinite, eternal, radiant consciousness, or that you are the Buddha, or that you are eternal. What I suggest to you is that you put all of that aside. You don't, you know, you can always pick it back up again. But you put all of that aside. Every bit of spiritual understanding that you have come upon. Every bit of knowing what it is you're looking for in the spiritual realm, that you put it all aside, and just for this time, do nothing but be determined with all of your heart to know what you are. Because it's really that simple. There's nothing more to it. Now, how hard can that be? I mean, here you are. You've never changed. Oh, the body changes. The mind changes. Everybody knows that. Bodies grow old and decrepit. They get hurt. They lose parts of themselves. The mind changes. It, too, grows old and decrepit. It loses things that it once knew. It takes itself very seriously. It changes from moment to moment. It's endlessly coming and going. Endlessly coming and going. So the mind changes. Body changes. Relationships change. Position in society changes. Wealth and poverty changes. But all of these things, states change. Good states, bad states, intermediate states, they come and go, morph into each other. But in all of this, what remains, what is the common denominator of everything, is you. It is you in which all of these things live and move and have their being. You. And it's commonplace. It is everybody's experience, I suspect, to look in the mirror and be surprised to see how much this body has changed. And to, in an instant, get a flash of a realization that I have never changed. I am the same as I have always been. I am the same as I was when I was 5, when I was 16. I am the same. Well, you see, it is that that has never changed. It is the same in all states. It is the same asleep or awake. It is the same regardless of what. It is that that you are. And you know it. So the whole secret of self-inquiry, which is the gift of Ramana Maharshi, I'm sure it predates him, but it's his gift to us. The whole thing of self-inquiry is to steadfastly, whenever it's possible, turn your attention to the experience of being you without distracting and confusing yourself with any kind of spiritual commentary about subject and object and what I really am and what I can't be and all of that. You turn your attention to the experience of being you. And just, which I tell you, as with everything else, matters not what it is. All experience presents itself as sensation. So does the experience of you present itself as sensation. The method of self-inquiry is to find beneath the words, beneath the understanding, beneath all of the assumptions, to find that experience that is you and feel it. Fall into it. Directly. Now the purpose of self-inquiry is not to describe yourself. That's what all our lives have been about up to now, is describing ourselves in one way or another. Self-inquiry has nothing to do with describing yourself. This knowing the truth of what you are is silent. And you already know. You are already that knowing. The shift is the shift of conscious attention to the experience of I. Now, what comes of that? Nothing. Life goes on. The personality goes on. Thoughts go on. Emotions go on. You see, none of those things have anything to do with you. The habits of personality continue. Sometimes what happens is that things seem to get worse. Emotions and personality, habits of personality and traits and thoughts, evil thoughts that you were convinced you had successfully put an end to, turn out not to have been put an end to after all, and come back. I tell you this, finding what you are, which I promise you from my heart, is what you've always wanted. Finding what you are is easy. How could anything be easier? I mean, here you are, for God's sake. You can't escape from yourself. No matter how hard you try, you can't get away from yourself. You can't do anything about yourself. Finding your own nature is easy. You already know it. There's nothing new to be attained. Waking up, on the other hand, can be very hard. Waking up can be very hard. Not hard in the sense that there's anything whatsoever you can do to make it easy. You know, practices and so forth. But hard in the sense that waking up is always hard. I mean, Sunday morning, lying in bed, comfortable, at rest, sort of, warm, cozy. Who wants to wake up? It's hard. Well, the misery that's characterized our lives is comfortable, familiar, unchallenging. It's something that we have made accommodation with. Waking up from that is hard. Finding your nature is easy. And finding your nature is dangerous. Because I also guarantee you that when you consciously meet yourself, knowing that what you have met is you, you can't go back. You can try, and many do, but you can't go back. You cannot unsee what you've seen. And the waking up part is hard. All of the stuff that you knew you had gotten rid of will come back. All of the habits and strategies and tactics that you have used to stay asleep for all these years will assert themselves with new vigor. All of the excuses and justifications for staying asleep will come back to you. Waking up is hard. Truth is easy. And all that's required of you, because you see, none of the habits of personality, none of the emotions, whether they be positive or negative, none of the states, none of the understandings, none of the things that you do or think you have done, none of those things matter here. They matter in the world, perhaps, but they don't matter here, in the heart of being. They say absolutely nothing about you. No matter how sweet and beautiful and intelligent and insightful and or stupid and closed up and hateful and aggressive you might be, none of that says anything about you. That's the mistake we've made. We have thought that the ways in which the personality manifests is what we are. And we've tried to do something about all of that. You must know by now that that ain't, doesn't do a thing. So none of the things about your personality say anything about what you are. They in no way whatsoever change, enhance, or diminish your nature. They have nothing whatsoever to do with your nature. Nothing. So the antidote to the hardness of waking up, and I promise you it's hard, the antidote to the hardness of waking up is to do nothing about it. Always before, we're told what we have to do in order to deal with whatever it is that personalities throw up and whatever my problems are, my particular difficulties, my particular horror stories and so forth. The antidote to it is to do nothing about it, about any of it. To rest your conscious attention in the experience of being. Whenever possible. Whenever you catch yourself out there helping the difficulty of waking up, stop. Fall back, relax into yourself, and let all of this be as it is. The body stuff, the mind stuff, the personality stuff, you didn't start it, you can't stop it, it came on its own, and it will go on its own. And it means nothing. So satsang, this offering, is simple and radical. Radical in the sense of being at the root of it, at the heart of it. First, last, and always, find yourself. Doesn't matter, there's nothing whatsoever that you can find that is you. There's nothing whatsoever that you can find that is not you. So find whatever it is that's present here that feels like me, that feels like I, and fall into it. Taste it. See what it is. Directly, and stay there. Whenever it occurs to you, whenever it seems that you are afflicted, that you are too confused to get it, that you have irrevocably made it impossible for you to wake up, whenever it feels like any of that, find out who it is you're talking about. In this way, you can see that everything that arises without exception is your ally in this effort. Because everything whatsoever is about you. The good things, the bad things, the mediocre things, they're all about you. You are at the center of this universe. So in all cases, use whatever arises to find yourself. the one who sees it, the one who's afflicted by it, the one who wants it to stay, the one who wants it to go, the one who hates it, the one who loves it. Just that. There's no need to weave any kind of a story that justifies and explains this need to know your own nature. If you weave such a story, such stories can be woven. If you weave such a story and such an understanding, you will find yourself endlessly having to adjust it, as you have always had to adjust your stories and understandings about spiritual reality. The one thing that is unadjustable is you. So the suggestion is simply for once in this life to follow the offering of these few great beings that have appeared among us, who have told us to find ourselves, to just do what they say, without needing to know why, without needing to know the outcome. Just do what they say and find yourself directly, without mediation, below the assumptions, before the understanding. Okay, your turn. That's what I have to offer. Any questions? Any arguments? Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi, John. Okay, so if we're not spiritual beings in these bodies, what are we?
That's exactly the right question. Except without the "if we're not" part. Just what are we? But you see, you can't know what we are. We is some, is all of this that has appeared in your consciousness. You can't ask we what it is, but you can find out what you are. And it's really critical. This is important. This business that you heard this, if we are not spiritual beings. I'm not saying you're not a spiritual being. I'm not saying anything whatsoever about what you are or are not. What I am saying is that the discovery of your actual nature, no matter what it is, spiritual or not spiritual, will bring an end to the sense that you are not fulfilled, that you are not satisfied. It'll bring an end to the search. It'll bring you to rest. And it is extremely important that you put no conditions on your search for the truth of your nature. I'm looking for myself as a spiritual being, or I'm looking for myself as a not spiritual being. I'm just looking for myself. What am I? This is the search that all the other searches in life have disguised, kept you from.
It's so simple that everybody misses it.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's so simple. We know there's something missing. There's something we want. Oh, where can it be? That's right. Oh, you're very welcome. Steve. Steve?
You got it.
Haven't seen you for a while, it seems.
Yep. The gist of what I'm hearing you say reminds me of when I grew up in New Jersey.
Oh, so,
somebody would say something, and the response would be, who wants to know?
Yes, that's right.
That so, like, every time like I think Ramana. I've been doing this for 5 years, how come it's not working? Who wants to know? Yes. Why am I coming here? Who wants to know? Everything I have to say, if I don't inquire, feels like a trap of just the mind spinning off somewhere.
And it is. And it is a trap. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Now, it's not to say that it's not legitimate in meetings like this to ask questions, even if they are, God forbid, spiritual questions. But only because there's a possibility in a meeting like this of banishing them.
Well, when I found out about satsang, I felt a lot of relief in the sense I didn't have to ask any more spiritual questions. But I didn't have the relief of, you know, I'm still in that sense of incompleteness. And of course, who wants to know?
This sense of incompleteness, this is an experience, right? It feels like something, doesn't it? Is it here? Why don't you see what it is?
It's just sensation.
Yeah, and so calling it a sense of incompleteness is really unjustified. You don't know what it is, do you?
No, I don't know what anything is.
It's just a sensation. Now, here's the interesting thing. Another thing that all these great beings have told us again and again, which I alluded to, is that there is nothing but you anywhere to be found. That nothing is what you think it is, and everything is you. Everything. So, if you have this sense of incompleteness, this feeling, something's wrong, I don't quite get it, find out what it is. I guarantee you that what you will find at its core, beneath the surface of the sensation, is you. But you can't know that. And see, this is what happens in a lot of satsang settings. It's not uncommon to suggest to us that we meet whatever arises and fall into it and so forth. And it's the general experience when doing that, that the experiences that I hated so badly turn out to be inexistent when really investigated. And there is a huge relief. A relief upon discovering that what I have been so exercised about isn't anything at all. And so now we have a new state to fall in love with, the state of this huge gush of relief at discovering that what I have hated isn't anything at all, really. This is why it is so critical to focus primarily the inquiry on your own nature. And the reason for that is that if consciously you fall into an experience that you know is you, what you discover at its core, you will know to be yourself. And when you find that same at the core of incompleteness, you will know incompleteness to be yourself, and not something that you are so happy to be rid of, but just yourself, manifesting as incompleteness, Manifesting is completeness. Manifesting is fear. Manifesting as all of it.
And yet you're saying to investigate incompleteness is not necessary just to investigate who I am.
No, I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying that you can go along, and I tell you, there's a great opportunity to get high in this business of satsang by meeting, welcoming whatever arises, falling into its core, and getting the rush that comes from the discovery that it isn't anything at all. And it's possible to use satsang in that way. It's possible for the human mind. You know, we are perverse creatures. It's possible for the human mind to use anything to gratify itself. Really, anything. Except one thing, and that's the discovery of its own nature. That puts an end to it. So it's crucial that you find exactly what you are, directly, without any stories or understandings or seeking confirmation of some spiritual idea or anything. It's crucial that you find out what you are. And that's easy. It is equally self-inquiry when you have discovered the truth of your own nature to investigate everything that comes in this hard business of waking up. And see whether there's any truth to the assertion that it's you. Now that you know what you are, you have the tool to see whether this incompleteness is something other than you, that something has to be done with, some relationship has to be maintained with, or whether it is, as I am saying, as all the great beings have said, you. Do you follow that?
I follow it, and where this thinking seems to be is in the sense that finding the truth of my nature is still where I'm at.
What's holding you up?
It seems that in the investigation, the second attention focuses on self, there's a distraction that pulls the attention away.
So?
And then it just goes back.
That's right.
Whenever there's remembering, it goes right back. That's all that's happening.
That's all that's
in terms of identifying what my nature is or anything like that.
Well, maybe there's some confusion here. What do you speak of? What do you mean when you say identifying my nature?
When I put my attention on self, what's always noticed is changing experience, changing sensation.
Then you're stopping too soon.
Yeah.
You know, you're just stopping on the surface.
Yeah, and then there'll be something like blankness. And then the blankness turns into an image. And then the attention goes on the image and realizing, so that's where basically I've been since I started
doing this. Right now, Steve. You're here, aren't you?
Yep.
Where are you? What do you feel like? What's it feel like to be? Forget looking for self. Maybe that's too much.
It feels like a bundle of sensation.
Okay. But a bundle of sensations, right, means what? What's it feel like to be?
I don't know.
That's what I'm asking you to find out. You are, right?
Yeah.
You can't deny that.
Yeah.
Why can't you deny it? What present experience is there that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are?
Definitely a sense of self.
Huh?
Definitely some sense of this thing called, some people call self.
Yeah, well, forget calling it self.
There's a sense of me.
Okay, that sense of me, right, that is you. Now, it is absolutely possible for you to decline to look for yourself as self, to decline, to, as you enact the investigation, for you to decline to keep track of what's happening. Like an image appears and I get distracted and then I'm paying attention to the image and so forth. It's not necessary for you to pay attention to this chain of events. What you're after, and when the hunt is on, when you get the scent of it, which you do, I saw it just a second ago, none of that stuff is of any interest. There is here and now that which makes it impossible for you to deny that you are. That's what you want to taste directly. Don't call it self. Don't call it being. And you see, it can't be these passing experiences, because they come and go.
And yet they seem to overwhelm the attention. The attention just goes there.
What is it that sees this overwhelming of the attention? Who reports on that?
John, I give up.
Excellent.
I can't do this.
Excellent.
The mind is going all over the place.
What is that to you? This is a good sign, Steve. It's not a bad sign. It's a good sign. What is that to you? Let the mind do what it does.
What it is to me is it takes the attention with it.
It can't take anything. It's just thought.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't take anything. Who sees this? Who sees this incredible play of attention being stolen by thought? I know that it feels that way, but who feels it?
I do.
That's it. If you can say that, you are saying that from yourself. Now, it's not required of you that you spend every waking moment with attention sunk in being. That's some spiritual fairy tale. That's not what's required. What is required to be finished once and for all is just now. In this moment. Always now. Without reference to any then. Do you hear that? You do hear it, I can tell.
All the stories are about then.
That's right, all the stories are about then. That's exactly right. And all that's required of you is that you meet yourself now.
I think I've been trying to do that for 6 years, and it's just...
Well, that's a story about then, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
See, this is what I mean. You have found yourself innumerable times.
Yeah,
I've been with you when you have. I've seen it again and again. This is what I'm talking about when I tell you that waking up is hard. Finding yourself is easy. Waking up is hard. but it doesn't have anything to do with you. Steve, it is really possible for you to decline to care about all of your failures. That the failures, the trying to do it and not succeeding, is all a tale about the personality and about the habits of the personality. It doesn't mean a thing. You know who you are. You've always known who you are. The more you try to gauge, to judge your progress on the basis of what the mind's doing,
oh, God.
That sure seems like a waste.
That is a waste. It's a waste of this life. It's a waste of this precious opportunity. Mind's crazy, man.
Oh, yeah.
The mind is crazy. It's its nature. Let it be. You know. Let it be.
Okay.
Okay. We are so... burdened with this whole business about how our nature has something to do with how we look, how we think, what thoughts come to us, how disciplined or undisciplined we are, whether we have good thoughts or bad thoughts, whether we have good intentions or bad intentions, about the personality and its absolute unreliableness. We are so burdened by the idea that all, that any of this has anything to do with the truth. It's enough to make one mad. Personality is beside the point. It's irrelevant. The mind is irrelevant. And all that we've been doing up to now has been trying to do something about mind, insofar as our spiritual life is concerned. Knowing that when I really get it, when I'm really there, everything will be clear. Thoughts will disappear, and the bright sunshine of a new day will dawn in this mind. I will be happy. I will radiate nothing but goodness and good feelings to all. All of my rancor, all of my anger, all of my pettiness and selfishness and whatever will vanish like a fog in the morning sun. This is a fairy tale. This is a fairy tale. You are untouched by anything in time. The person, the mind, the personality is time. That's what it is. It is time. And it is bound by time. It is bound by cause and effect. Bound by action and reaction. You have nothing to do with that. And the idea that, I mean, the time will come when this mind will still. When all of your confusion and contradictions will vanish, and the body too will vanish. What's that to you? Who are you? Really? I tell you the truth. There are many, many, many teachings and ideas and thoughts and practices and so forth. That's politics and religion and all of it, that seek somehow to change human behavior in order to make things okay in the world. Well, I have to say that in, what is it, 10,000 years of trying to do so, we ain't done very good. None of it works. None of it. The truth of the matter is that the only possibility for peace and freedom to take root in the human world, in the human realm, is for us to be finished with trying to fix ourselves. That's the truth. Be finished with trying to fix ourselves. We try to fix ourselves in order that we can be better and feel better and feel better about ourselves. We try to fix ourselves as an act of aggression. It's all aggression. It's all warmongering, this fixing of oneself, this becoming more peaceful and more loving and more open-hearted. It's all aggression. Stop. And the way to stop is not to take on some new fix, stopping the fixing. The way to stop is to do nothing until you know the truth of your own nature. That first. Before you start trying to meddle with the way your mind works or your personality works or your emotions work, first find out who you are. That's what's in common with it all. And then see what needs to be done from there. But first that. And until that, don't do anything. Let it all play as it does. And I tell you that if you take up this inquiry, you can expect that all of the ugliness will come back doubled and redoubled. Because everything that we've done in our lifetime to try to become good people, you know, good people, not like those other people, the good people, people that God loves. Everything we've done in our life to try to become good people by repressing, killing off, locking up, destroying the bad thoughts, the bad emotions, the bad, the negative ideas, the negative vibrations. All of those things that we have, to whatever degree of success, managed to stuff into the dungeon of our fixing. When you engage in this inquiry, they will all come rushing out. And that's another reason why waking up is hard. Truth is easy. Waking up is hard. But for whom is it hard? Okay. What else? Yeah.
First of all, thank you.
You're very welcome.
When we've realized ourselves, found ourselves, is it the self that then sort of takes over the process and pushes this forward? And I guess part two would be, if we have realized ourselves but don't believe that we're awake, we're going through this and not awake, does that mean there's more to come of what you call the hard stuff? And that when enough of that has, when it's finished and you're clear, then the awakening will happen?
Nope. You see, it's important for you to see that you can't say, I have realized myself. To suggest such a thing is to suggest that there was a time when you had not realized yourself. And that's just not true. One of the most profound things that Ramana Maharshi had to say was this: the only thing standing between you and self-realization is the belief that you are not already, always, fully realized. The whole game of seeking realization or enlightenment or awakening or whatever it is founded on a lie. It's founded on the assumption that there's something that needs to be done and that you are not already fully awake. That's the reason it always fails, the effort to attain awakening. You have never not been awake. Never. It is a great mystery how it can be that we can report to each other with such heartfelt sincerity that, oh, I am asleep. I don't know what it is. Attention, my attention is stolen by thoughts. It's a great mystery that we can sincerely report this to each other because it is self-evidently false. Nothing of the kind is happening. And the question about what will happen and when it will happen and so forth is just a continuation of this same storyline. When will I wake up? When will this be over? Now. Now is when. Whenever you speak that word now, now is when. And if it's over now, what do you care about then? It's only when you try to drag then into now that the addiction to the problem continues. Do you hear this? It's always now. So, if what they have all been saying is true, which is that you are eternal consciousness itself, if what they have all been saying is true, then now, at any moment, now, you cannot speak other than that. I am that. And that's my experience. If you care not about then you must say now, I am that. Steve again.
I think I've been throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
I think that's quite possible. Which baby and which bathwater?
The baby of when you say who's looking out, and that there's an immediate recognition. There's immediate
that's
recognition.
Right.
And then the next thought is, that's not it. It's something deeper than that.
Yep.
And so I've been sitting here paying attention to that initial recognition and really having a sense. It's almost like there's this looking out through these things called eyes. There's this whole thing out there. And one level, it's sort of like, it's not really real, yet it's there and it's me. And it's a very weird sensation.
It's a very weird sensation. And it is the natural state.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's just the natural state. You see, what happens is, and it doesn't matter how sincere you might be in your promise never to do this, What happens is that we have an idea of what this spiritual awakening business feels like. What it should feel like, for God's sake. What it should feel like. It should feel like, explosion and, you know, something, right? Something deep, something really deep and new. No matter how often we hear that if you are permanent, if you are eternal, you are not new. If you are new, then you will soon become old and die. So that we bring in, this is really good, we bring into this inquiry without even knowing it. Because our assumptions, in order for them to be assumptions, they're invisible. There's something that we have made so part of our habit of personality that we don't even know they're there. We bring into this inquiry something that allows us to say, well, that can't be it. It has to be deeper than that. You see that?
And I've heard you say over and over again, it's just what's right there.
That's right.
Yeah. It's just, and of course, when I look for what's right there, that's not... Thank you.
What distinguishes you? Yeah, okay. Go on. What, just let me finish what I'm saying. No, go ahead, yeah. What distinguishes you from all things else? The only thing that distinguishes you from all things else is that you never change. That means that you are ordinary. Really ordinary. Profoundly ordinary. And that's what happens when we skip our attention over that. The reason your attention goes back to thoughts is because you're looking for something that's not ordinary. Oh, not there. I know that. That's here all the time, for God's sake. Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Awesome. That was the opening speech was just awesome. I don't really have any questions.
That's okay.
No.
Okay. That's good. It's not required to have a question. Nothing's required here. Sometimes I think that, and I said in the beginning here that satsang works best when you're engaged, when we're all engaged, really, like you, except not. Engaged. But it occurs to me sometimes, especially when I'm with people for the first time, that it's possible that what I say you actually receive, and that it's stunning, and therefore it's really difficult to have a conversation, and that's okay too. My prayer is only this. My prayer is that you know yourself. And it's of no consequence or interest or importance to me what storyline seems to bring that about. Really, I'll say anything if I think it might get you to actually look at yourself just in this moment. So the whatever it is that brings that about is of absolutely no interest to me. The stories, the spiritual underpinnings and all of that. I don't care about that. I don't care about anything except you. Only you. Other than which there is nothing. And I pray that whenever it occurs to you in the coming days, whenever it occurs to you, that you will just stop for a second now and see what it is now that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are. Now. And then that you will not overly concern yourself with anything that happens other than now, with thoughts and emotions and feelings and so forth. And that you will not be overly concerned if there comes a time when you say, oh my God, I'm just worthless. It's been days and I've been chewing on this and that and the other thing. It is my hope and my prayer that should you find yourself doing that, you will right now stop. And look for yourself. None of that means a thing. You are infinite, eternal consciousness itself. The habits of personality, the thoughts, the emotions, all of the rightness and the wrongness about you are your radiance, your countenance. They have no meaning. They say nothing about you. Always and forever, now, in this moment, find yourself, and all will be well. All will be well. Okay? I'm very happy to have met with you like this. This has been a wonderful meeting in Satsang. Thank you for this Satsang. My only prayer is that all being know itself. Period. Know the truth. Bless itself. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.